You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the weekend, and thanks for kicking it off here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. On today's show, on this Friday, May 17th, we're going to be looking back at the first off-season interview with GM Daryl Morey and head coach Mike D'Antoni and trying to break down what it all means. The interview was taped on Tuesday of this week and broadcast late Thursday on Rockets All Access, which airs on the Rockets TV network over at AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. The interviewer was Bill Worrell, who of course is the longtime television voice of the Rockets and their broadcast. The reason this particular interview was so interesting is because the Rockets did not do their usual coach and GM exit interviews this year with the media. So other than the immediate press conferences following Game 6 a week ago, and of course those did not include Daryl Morey, we have not heard a word from the franchise as to what the thought process is regarding everything that happened. This is the first peek behind the curtain, if you will. And before we close out our usual three-part show, we'll also touch on everything going on currently in the NBA playoffs. In case you've checked out, the Warriors are now up 2-0 on Portland in the Western Conference Finals, and I'll try and provide some insight on which particular storylines are most relevant to Houston. Anyway, let's start with breaking down the interview. For clarity, if you have yet to read the quotes or seen the videos, I've got a thread on both my personal Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose, and the show's Twitter page, at Locked On Rockets, with all the information. Personally, I don't really see a point in reading back all of the quotes, especially because a lot of them, they just basically amount to political PR. It's spin. A lot of it is predictable in terms of what they say, give credit to the Warriors, but they didn't own the key moments in the close games, and they need to be better. The margin between Houston and Golden State, it's close. They feel like they've got a chance every year because they have James Harden, who they view as the MVP, the best player in the world. They know he's a draw for free agents every offseason, and even though they're capped out, they can be creative and they should be able to still upgrade the team. I'm not saying I necessarily disagree with any of that, but those statements are pretty obvious. I could have guessed many of them, and I'm guessing that you probably could have as well. So instead, what I'm going to be trying to do on this podcast is spinning it forward and offering some insight on how to best decode what was said by Morey and D'Antoni, and what the most relevant new pieces of information are. And as I see it, the far and away biggest takeaway of the interview is that Mike D'Antoni is coming back. Now, it was never explicitly asked, but they were incredibly laid back and comfortable with one another. They were even cracking jokes. At one point, Daryl mentioned that the Rockets' championship odds were third, trailing only the Warriors and the Bucks. D'Antoni cracked a joke, as he often does, saying, "That's for next season, right?" Because obviously the Rockets' current odds of winning a championship are not very good. Unfortunately, they're at zero, obviously. And several times throughout the interview, Mike talked about how they regroup, getting ready for September. Daryl offered a lot of praise for Mike's coaching style and his flexibility and his willingness to adapt the system to the players he has. And of course, we'll talk more about that in our second segment coming up when we go through a little bit more of the actual mechanisms of what was said and what it means. Here off the top, the key takeaway to me, while it was never directly asked or said, this has me feeling very confident that Mike D'Antoni will return. Because far and away, the biggest impetus for any change on the coaching front would have been emotional in nature. It would have been a reaction to getting booted by the Warriors for the second straight year, 4 out of 5, but of course, the two back in 2015 and 2016 were pre-Mike D'Antoni. That does not have much to do with this system. But the point is, if there was going to be any change on the coaching front, it would not have necessarily been a logic-driven decision. Mike D'Antoni certainly does not deserve to be fired. His 3 seasons in Houston have been exemplary. If Houston was going to move on, the case would be something similar to Toronto with Dwayne Casey a year ago when he won Coach of the Year, but was let go. And when he was let go, that was 3 days after the season. So I feel pretty confident that if they're doing this interview together and both of them are talking about the season to come. I don't think there's another shoe to drop. If that was going to happen, I think it would come pretty quickly. Because at face value, the three seasons for the Rockets, 55 wins in year one, and that was coming off a 41-41 season, very muted expectations. Then 65-17, the best team in franchise history, even though they didn't win a title. Most people consider that due to Chris Paul's hamstring. And this year, even though they won 53, look, the final 60 games of the season, roughly, they were on a 60-win pace. And then they beat a very good Jazz team in five games in round one. And they were competitive with the Warriors again in round two. If the Rockets were going to make a move on the coaching front, and there was not an immediate endorsement this year, and there was also a little bit of curiousness to how quiet they were, not the usual exit interviews, it would have been because they felt like they were at this weird point as a franchise that they just could not get over the Warriors hump. And if that was the case, that's not a decision that takes weeks and months of reflection to get to. It's a gut feel. For the Rockets, a week after what happened, to come out and have Mike D'Antoni on their programming and sitting down with Daryl Morey, to me, it indicates pretty strongly that that's not how they are viewing this situation. And beyond just the fact that they referenced next season, how they regroup, there were some points in the interview where Daryl Morey talked about other teams that had overreacted, such as the Mavs, and how earlier this decade, after winning a title, actually, they sort of tore that team apart. And after overreacting, they have struggled and to this point have still not gotten back anywhere close to where they were at that point. And of course, the undertone to that is you don't want to overreact to any one particular bad moment, because of course it is really tough to win or even contend for an NBA title. So if the Rockets were going to do anything drastic, I tend to think it would have happened very quickly. Because when you dig into the season as a whole, the 3 years of Mike D'Antoni in Houston, he's been really, really good. There's not a lot of truly rational reasons to think that this is a coach that you can upgrade, especially given the options on the market at this current moment. If the Rockets were going to make a move, it would have largely been, in my opinion, because they just have deep down a gut feel that this is not going to work against the Warriors and they need to try something different. So the fact that their messaging in the first interview since that series is about the virtues of being close. As Daryl Morey said, keep plugging away. That does not feel like a franchise that's wanting to hit the reset button and try to radically change things because they feel that their current path is not going to get them over the top. This feels like a franchise that, while frustrated, they believe in what they are doing. Of course, they need to make changes. They need to upgrade the team wherever possible. But the silence from the past week, it's odd that they did not do their usual exit interviews. But at this point, watching those two, how they interact with one another, I tend to believe, as Hunter Atkins did in our show on Wednesday here at Locked On Rockets, that the endorsement of Mike D'Antoni, it's implicit. Because over his 3 years in Houston, he has been really good. He's got a great relationship with James Harden and Chris Paul, the stars of the team. Obviously, he works well with Daryl Morey. And at this point, it's pretty clear that the Rockets, they view it as simply needing to plug away in terms of what their outlook is for the offseason and trying to get back to this point next May with another shot against the Golden State Warriors. So there's more than that in the interview. Of course, there were some specific insights into the coaching style of Mike D'Antoni that I think were fairly telling, especially from Daryl Morey. We'll get into that momentarily. But for now, I do want to remind you guys that to get this show each and every day, you should subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya Podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. You can download Himalaya at your app store and then subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, now jumping back into the program, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. On this Friday, May 17th, we're looking back at the first interview, which aired late Thursday night on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, of Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni. The first public comments by the Rockets, really since Game 6 and the immediate post-game press conferences, which of course did not include Daryl Morey. So this is the first real look at the offseason and what their priorities are. So in segment one, we discussed what seems to at this point be implicit. Barring something extraordinary, Mike D'Antoni does appear to be set as the coach for the Rockets entering this 2019-2020 season. They did officially pick up his option back in March. Now, of course, teams can go back on that if they want. But at this point, there seems to be a high degree of comfort between Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni. And it doesn't, to me, appear like, both from the literal quotes and also the subtext, the little hidden things, the meanings, nothing that I heard from Daryl Morey on Thursday night seems to indicate that he's looking at making a change. So to me, that's the overall key takeaway, because before this, the silence, lots of wild things can happen in silence. So this should settle those rumors a little bit. The Rockets appear set on the coaching front. But beyond just the fact that Mike is coming back, I also think there were some really telling things that Daryl said in his endorsement of Mike D'Antoni that are pretty interesting when it comes to the strategies that they're going to employ for next season. And again, a lot of what was said in this interview, which in total was about 8-9 minutes, were fairly predictable. They love building around James Harden. They think he's the best player in the world. He's the MVP. They're disappointed by the playoff run, but they value being close. A lot of that is predictable. And I'm not even saying that any of it is wrong. It's just, you know, going into the interview, what they're going to say. What was most revealing to me, the portion of it, and I posted this video on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose, was when Bill Worrell asked first Mike D'Antoni about the criticisms of his coaching style and whether it could win a championship. Because, of course, even going back to his time in Phoenix, while D'Antoni has been close a lot in his career, he has not won an NBA title. And, of course, Mike said the question is fair. He understands it, but he defended his system. And, of course, he pointed out that the system that they're running now in Houston is not really that similar to what they did in Phoenix. It's definitely not 7 seconds or less. It's very isolation heavy. It's slower paced. And that's because it plays to the strengths of the players. And then Daryl Morey jumped in. This is what I thought was really interesting, and noted that he thought that D'Antoni did a great job at adapting his system to the personnel. And of course, that's pointing to the fact that James Harden and Chris Paul are very different players than Steve Nash in Phoenix. And of course, that has a lot to do with the fact that these Rockets are a bit slower paced, that they are more dependent on isolation, less ball movement. Mike D'Antoni also pointed out that, of course, they could play like the Warriors, but they don't have the personnel in terms of the ball movement, the shooting. So if they played like them, well, they're probably not going to get the results. They have to tailor their system to who they have. And while, of course, there are points on the floor that they'll want to emphasize in terms of less mid-range shots, more threes, because there's certain advantages to that, overall, the majority of the system is tailored to the players. And Mike pointed out, and Daryl seemed to agree, that this is not the way that Mike necessarily wants to play. It's what they think is best for the personnel that they have. So in terms of decoding it, this is both guys, not just D'Antoni, but Daryl Morey as well, pushing back on the system critiques, the idea that the Rockets should be playing a different way and that they're systemically flawed in terms of their approach against the Warriors. This is them saying, no, this is the best way to win with the pieces that we've got. And I thought it was a pretty strong endorsement of Mike D'Antoni's coaching philosophy. And of course, that feeds into what I think is the key takeaway that, yeah, he's coming back for next season. Now, he does not have a long-term extension yet. And some of it, you know, Mike is 68 years old. He's the second oldest coach in the NBA. So who knows exactly how long he wants to do this. But at least as far as next season, they've picked up his option already. And he feels pretty secure after the quotes that Daryl Morey made. Certainly the degree of comfort between them, but also just the endorsement of the job he did throughout the season. Now, in terms of whether I agree, I think there's a couple of different areas. First, defensively, what stands out the most, and of course some of this is not Mike D'Antoni, it's Jeff Bezdelic, but it's D'Antoni's decision to hire Bezdelic, and it's his staff, the switching scheme. I will buy that the Kevin Durant injury late in Game 5 really, really muddied the water. I think it's very difficult to change on the fly the scheme that you've put together, the all-out switching for 2 years in large part to gum up the Warriors' offense with KD, and now all of a sudden they've switched back to more ball movement. We've heard from Seth Curry in the Western Conference Finals that he thinks, Seth of the Blazers, that the Warriors are more difficult to defend, more complicated without Kevin Durant, and of course that's alluding to the ball movement. Said not better, but more complicated. And I think for the Rockets, on the fly, midway through a series, you know, it's worth noting that the Warriors scored just 15 points in the third quarter. That was pre-Durant's injury in that Game 5. Then they scored 32 in the fourth quarter. And then, of course, 113, punctuated by 36 in the fourth of the closeout Game 6. So I buy that defensively, that was a pretty hard hand that they were dealt in terms of having to adjust on the fly the Warriors going from the Durant-led offense to now the old school Steph and Draymond Green pick and roll. That's pretty difficult. So I give them a pass on the defensive end of the floor. I think their issues, while that was where they lost the series, at the same time, I don't really buy the idea that they're systemically flawed. The Warriors are really great. And then, of course, the switch on a dime, which they're more comfortable with the switch because they can go back to the way they played in 2015, 2016, years and years of experience. Whereas the Rockets, their entire system for the last couple of years has been built around this matchup with the Warriors with Kevin Durant. So defensively, I give them a bit of a pass. It's frustrating, but I don't think there's that many other teams that would have done better in the circumstances. Offensively, that's where it's more critical because I see two distinct ways that Mike D'Antoni has coached in Houston. It has not always been this way. The first year, that 55-win season in 2017, I don't know that they were ever 7 seconds or less like they were in Phoenix, but they were a much faster pace. You go back and look just 2 years ago, the style of basketball, it was much quicker. There was more ball movement, and yet it was still led by James Harden. And of course, it shows how great Harden is, that he's capable of playing two wildly different styles. But now you look at how slow-paced it is very different from 2 years ago, and really even the first half of the 2017-2018 season. Everybody thinks that it was a smooth ride because they won 65 games, and they did win a lot no matter what. But the first half of that season, they largely played the same way that they did the year before. And I think it's because Chris Paul, he hurt his knee in the preseason. He missed the first 15 games or so of the season with one exception. So they kept playing the same way they did the year before. Now, of course, the year before they had more depth. On top of James Harden and Eric Gordon, they also had Pat Beverly, Lou Williams. They did not have all those pieces in year two. But James Harden, Eric Gordon, no Chris Paul, they still played up-tempo. And it looked an awful lot like what they did the year before that. Now, as the year moved along and Chris Paul got more comfortable, the pace slowed, and Chris Paul is known for being one of the league's slower-paced point guards. And, of course, that's how they had a lot of success in that playoff run, nearly beat the Warriors, came a hamstring away, and then that carried into this season. And I'm not going to say it's a terrible strategy, but in terms of my review of it, a lot of it depends on what version of Chris Paul you have. He is the reason for the change because James Harden, Eric Gordon, they have proven that they can play successfully both ways. What changed was the addition of Chris Paul, and in terms of whether it's successful, a lot of it depends on what version of Chris Paul you have. If you have the guy that was dominant in the 2018 playoffs, yes, absolutely. If you have the guy in Game 6 who put up 27 points on 11 of 19 shooting, yes, absolutely. It's worth it if he's that level of impact playing to his strengths. I get it. The question for the Rockets is if you can bank on that with Chris Paul now entering his age 34 season and his 15th in the NBA. There are not many point guards that have held on that long at a star level. So to me, that is the question. And as far as why, I think when you slow the game the way they do and you box yourself in regards to the clock, if James Harden is your only consistent creator, if he's your only option, then it does make you more predictable and it mucks up the offense because other teams can shade, they can commit more resources to James, and that makes it difficult for the Rockets to get their other players involved. And perhaps the counter, and we saw this a lot back in 2017, a year in which Harden was the only star of the team, you can overcome that to a degree if you play faster and you give yourself some advantages, more transition opportunities, chances earlier in the shot clock, that even if you don't have a legitimate star alongside James, then you give yourself other advantages, and offensively that should make you a better basketball team. You look at the Suns, the 7 seconds or less version. They had a lot of really skilled players, but Steve Nash, Joe Johnson, Sean Marion, Amari Stoudemire, none of those are the type of guys that you just give it to them and let them make a play one-on-one. No, they played fast because even though they're skilled, they're athletic, there's not really any true dominant perimeter creator, so they had to overcome that schematically in terms of their pace, their tempo. And even though the Rockets have James Harden, if he is the only creator on the floor, that does gum it up. Because then if you slow it down and you wait until the final 5-6 seconds to really make your move, then unless there's another dominant creator on the floor, it becomes too easy for the defense to shade their resources to commit more to James Harden, and there's not enough in the way of other creators or shooters to really make them pay for that. So in my opinion, the strategy in terms of tweaking the system to fit the players they have, it depends on what version of Chris Paul you have. If you have the guy in game six, then it works. And even though the Rockets lost game six, again, it was not because of the offense. They scored 113 points. It's just the Warriors scored 118. They scored 57 in the first half, even when Curry had nothing. Then in the fourth quarter, they scored 36. The Curry and Draymond pick and roll was unstoppable. They had 36 points overall in the fourth. So the Rockets lost that game on the defensive end of the floor. The offense was more than fine. On the other hand, game five, Chris Paul was 3 of 14. Now, they were fine in the fourth quarter of that game in terms of their offense, but the first three quarters, and they fell behind by 20, and that had as much to do with the outcome as anything. They just were not good enough offensively. So to me, whether the strategy is worthwhile and whether I agree with the idea that the system is currently being best optimized for the players that they have depends on what version of Chris Paul. The 2018 playoffs version, the game six of this year against the Warriors version, yeah, that makes sense. But if it's the guy that shot below 30% for the majority of the playoffs from three, I don't know. And the same goes for a guy who missed, again, 24 games due to injury in the regular season. So to me, if you're going to continue playing this style, you either need to be pretty confident in what you get from Chris Paul, which at 34 years old, I'd like to think that they are, but that's probably unlikely, or you need to bring in another top-tier creator. Maybe that's where Jimmy Butler fits in. I don't know. But in terms of the slower style, the predictability, the isolation-heavy scheme, I think it makes sense if you have two dominant perimeter scorers and creators. If you only have one, I don't think it does. So that really gets to the heart of the issue in terms of whether it makes sense to tweak the scheme. I think a lot of it's going to depend on if the Rockets acquire another star this offseason, and then to a lesser degree, what they think of Chris Paul entering next season. Because to me, you look back at the first couple of years of Mike in Houston, really the first year and a half, and then the last year and a half, the change is Chris Paul. A lot of the other guys, including James Harden, have been constant. They have proven that they can play in both styles. What we're seeing in terms of the slower pace, the isolation, the one variable that shifted was Chris Paul. And the question you have to ask yourself now as the Rockets enter his age 34 season and his 15th in the NBA, is it worth it to build so much of your scheme around Chris Paul? I can see that it was a year ago when you first acquired him, but now that his game is falling off, that's what they have to ask themselves. Now, I don't think even if they were privately considering tweaks that they would first announce them in a television interview. So I'm not going to say that just because they said this in an interview that this means that, oh, they're going to do the same thing next year. No, they may over the summer think about these things, and of course they have to wait and see exactly what the roster looks like as well. But in terms of whether I agree with what they have said to this point, to me, it depends on exactly what the roster is and what we get out of Chris Paul next season. If it's similar to the guy we had from the majority of the playoffs who really struggled to create his own offense at anywhere near the same rate he did a year ago, then I have some concerns. But ultimately, I don't think that it's something that's flawed from a Mike D'Antoni perspective, because he has shown in his time in Houston, really nearly half of the 3 years, that he is not married to playing that way. The question for the Rockets is whether they're ready to concede that Chris Paul is not the same guy and tweak the system accordingly. And that's going to be one of the themes to watch, as, of course, we see what happens in free agency. If they get a Jimmy Butler type, that may change the calculus. But if they don't, as we get closer to September, what do they say? Are there tweaks in terms of what they do in training camp, getting ready for the 2019-2020 season, that are different than 2018? That's what we'll have to wait and see. And to me, in terms of what they can control, I think that's another reason why you give some deference to D'Antoni, because he has shown a willingness to be flexible. He's coached different ways during his time in Houston. So that's another reason why you don't pull the plug on him, because again, it's not just him thinking that this is the way to go. No, he's gone multiple ways, and this is just probably best to the personnel that he has. But now that we have Chris Paul coming off a so-so season, not bad, but certainly not as good as a year ago, perhaps that leads to some changes tactically entering the 2019-2020 season. And then on the defensive side of the floor, we'll have to see what happens with Kevin Durant. Does he return to Golden State or leave? And if he leaves, perhaps that leads to some tweaks on the defensive side as well, since your top competition will not be playing nearly the same way. And we'll get to that more in our third and final segment as we look to the playoffs and what I see as the key remaining storyline for the Rockets. How do you get Kevin Durant out of Golden State? All right, finishing up on Friday's show here at Locked on Rockets, I'm Ben DuBose. We spent the first couple of segments talking about the newly released TV interview. You can see excerpts and quotes and videos on my Twitter timeline, at Ben DuBose, the interview of Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni, the first of the offseason since the Rockets did not do their usual exit interviews. Here in our third and final segment of Friday's show, I'm going to look at the ongoing NBA playoffs and what they mean for the Rockets. And if you checked out, since the Rockets were eliminated, the Bucks are up 1-0 in the East, and predictably the Warriors are up 2-0 in the West as we're taping this midday Friday. And I don't really take any consolation from the Warriors being ahead in the series. Look, we knew the Warriors were good. This is not a situation where the Rockets lost to the Warriors, but we feared that, oh, what happens if the Warriors then lose to Portland or someone else, and then it proves the Rockets are further off than we thought. No, the Warriors, this is their fifth straight year that they're going to win the Western Conference. This is a really long run, perhaps the greatest dynasty in the modern history of the NBA. So this is not a situation where you're waiting to see how they perform and that you take any sort of silver lining from them looking this good against other opponents. It doesn't really work that way. Even without Kevin Durant, we knew that they are this good. So I know on Twitter and on social media, it's nice to be able to defend yourself by pointing to the fact that, hey, the Warriors are really good, not just against you, but everybody else. But the reality is we already knew that. The Warriors are historically elite. So as far as the way the Rockets can build from this postseason, I don't know that anything that happens, whether the Warriors win, they lose, short of them just being embarrassed in a series, and that's not going to happen, there's not a lot that's going to change in terms of the Rockets' outlook based on this postseason. Even if the Warriors win every single game and sweep both the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals, well, that doesn't really change the margin between Houston and Golden State. That is what it is, and that's what's got to be the Rockets' focus as they try to overcome that for the 2019-2020 season. So I don't take a lot out of whether Golden State wins or loses. The gap is what it is, and the Rockets just have to build a better roster or perhaps make some tactical changes to try and address that. What I see as the key storyline is how do you get Kevin Durant out of Golden State? Now, let's be clear. Even if Durant walks, that does not guarantee anything. Because you know what? Of course they closed out the Rockets without Kevin Durant. They won the fourth quarter of Game 5, they won Game 6, and now they've won the first two against the Blazers without him. So they're still a good team, even without KD. They won 73 games. The last year they didn't have him, the most in NBA history. They won an NBA title without him. So even if he walks, that does not guarantee success. Let's be very upfront about that. As great as he is, the Warriors don't need him. I know that sounds crazy, but it's the truth. They are that good. That said, I do think it helps you chip away at the margins. For starters, the success the Warriors are having, it is important to note that while the games are big, it's a small sample size. This is not doing it over the 82-game grind. And one of the things the Rockets have said coming out of that 4-2 loss, what if they had had home court as they did a year ago? What if they didn't get off to that 11-14 start, which even after that, the Rockets only were 4 games worse than the Warriors over 82. If they start 15-10 instead of 11-14, then they are the one seed. And I know some will say, well, you lost a home game 6. Look, it's not just about home court advantage those games late in the series. It's also about starting off at home so that you don't fall behind 0-2 as you did this year. That's one big advantage from a year ago. Because when you fall down 0-2, there are just so many things that have to go right to beat a team like Golden State 4 out of 5 times. So while it wouldn't fix everything, would home court help? Yes, absolutely. And I think over 82 games, having Kevin Durant for the Warriors, in a small sample size, you might can overcome him, or not having him, that is. But over the grind, there are going to be injuries, there are going to be cold nights, there are going to be some second half of back-to-backs, where you just, through attrition, are not the version that you are under the lights. Now that every game is under the spotlight that it is, and you're 6 games away from winning your 4th NBA title and your 3rd straight if you're the Warriors. So over the 82-game grind, I do think that there are some definite benefits to them not having Kevin Durant. In the playoffs, I don't know, because there's more time off in between games, there's such a big spotlight, they might be able to overcome it in a small sample in the playoffs, but in the regular season, I do think this makes them a worse basketball team. Beyond that, we also have to note the ages. Steph Curry is going to be 32 years old next year. Andre Iguodala will be 36. Even Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, they're going to turn 30. We talk a lot about Chris Paul and his age 33 season this past year, the decline that happened. Well, Steph Curry is going to be 32. And then as far as those ages go, think about the physical toll from going to the NBA Finals 5 straight years, which is what the Warriors are about to do. That's an additional 20 to 25 games every single season. That's well over an extra season, and more than that when you consider the high minutes, the stress, the workload on all the bodies. There is going to be a point, Father Time does not stop for anyone, where some of this does catch up with them. So there could be some slippage in terms of the age, the mileage effects, which again, the depth of having Kevin Durant and what that means in terms of being able to manage an 82-game season, even if in a small sample you're able to overcome that, as the Warriors are now, over 82, you might not be able to. And if that helps the Rockets get home court advantage, then absolutely that could help you a year from now. And that's before we even go into the potential for physical-related declines as Steph Curry enters his age 32 season, Andre Iguodala his age 36, Klay and Draymond each getting into their 30s. And I'm assuming that Klay will be back, even though he's a free agent. I can't imagine him walking. So even though the Warriors right now in the first 3.25 games without Kevin Durant have been just fine, it doesn't mean that that's the way it would turn out next season and moving forward. I think there are definitely some advantages, even though it doesn't make the Warriors all of a sudden fall off the map. No, they're still going to be really, really good, but it's definitely a net positive for the Rockets if he leaves. And of course, beyond that, if the Rockets know going into the season, let alone the series, we're talking about the entire season, that the Warriors are not going to have KD, then of course they can perhaps tweak their defensive schemes, as we were saying, to make them more prepared for a ball movement-oriented Warriors as opposed to the isolation threat that Golden State is when they have Kevin Durant leading the way. So there are a lot of potential benefits if he leaves. The question is how you push him out the door. Now, there have been quotes all season long, or rumors, I should say, not quotes, no one's willing to go on the record, but there's been lots of connections between Durant and the Knicks and perhaps the Clippers, all these other destinations to which he could conceivably go. There's questions about how happy he is. And the one thing I will push back on, there was talk, and I've heard it since, that if the Warriors had lost to the Rockets a year ago, he would have left last summer. I've heard people that I trust that truly believe that. So until the Warriors lose, or until they win under some different circumstances, I'm not going to say that he's definitely gone. Because if you win 3 consecutive titles and then you go through the victory tour, the parade, that's an awful lot to walk away from. I don't care how much drama there might be during the season between Durant and Draymond and all the criticism he gets for being a bandwagoner and hopping onto a team that was already great. Despite all of that, if you continue to win, that can be tough to walk away from. So I've always said in a perfect world, the Warriors would lose to the Bucks or the Raptors. I don't think it's reasonable for them to lose to the Blazers. Portland just is not good enough. But in a perfect world, yeah, they lose to Toronto or Milwaukee. And at that point, I think it's easier for them and Durant in particular to justify saying, hey, it's time. Whereas if you continue winning, it's really tough to say that. The exception to this, in my opinion, is exactly what's playing out, which is if they win, the Warriors that is, all while showing the world that they don't need KD. For the Warriors to do what they are doing now, and we learned after game two that the calf injury, it's a bit more serious than they first thought. He's not even going to travel to Portland for game 3 and game 4. They'll reevaluate him next week, but it sounds pretty unlikely that he'll play in the Western Conference Finals unless there's an elimination game. They'll be holding him off for the NBA Finals, and perhaps not even then. At this point, he's not even in basketball shoes. He's not working out. So this 3.25-game run at the moment without KD, it's going to go on for at least a few more games, if not the entire rest of the season. And the Warriors having this much success without him, then even if they win, it plays into the narrative that Durant is not the guy responsible for bringing them their success, their titles. And that's the one scenario where even if they do win it all, then it makes it easier for him to leave to get the validation, the respect that he so obviously craves. To me, in a perfect world, of course, the Warriors would lose and we'll all have some fun at their expense on social media. I think Golden State losing is good for the soul at this point. But if that doesn't happen, then the scenario that's taking place right now is the second best scenario, which is that they win, but they do it without Kevin Durant playing a marquee role. Because I think that makes it all the easier for him to walk away in July. Hopefully, he'll go to the Eastern Conference. I think the Knicks would be ideal. Get the 7-foot, 30-points-a-game scorer out of the West. That would be great if you're the Rockets. But beyond that, even though the Warriors are okay without Kevin Durant now, that doesn't mean that over the 82-game grind that it's going to be the same thing. Especially with Steph Curry about to turn 32 and, as said earlier, Father Time stops for no one. We know that, unfortunately, here in Houston with what's happened with Chris Paul. So, in my opinion, it's less about the game-by-game results, and it's more about how they get there. And the current narrative for the Warriors, to me, it's a positive one from the standpoint of Kevin Durant ultimately leaving. And to me, that's the best thing the Rockets can hope for in terms of shrinking the gap in 2020 against these Warriors. Is it going to fix everything? No, absolutely not. There's no cure-all. They're still going to be really, really good. But at this point, there's not just one lever that the Rockets are going to be able to magically pull, and then all of a sudden, all these problems go away. No, you're just going to have to chip away at the margins however you can. And that's potentially a critical one that could go their way over the next 4 to 6 weeks. Will it happen? Stay tuned. Anyway, this is where we'll break things on this Friday, May 17th. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. And remember, if you want more content before our next episode early next week, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. If there's any new news from the Rockets, or if you just want commentary during the other NBA games, Astros Red Sox, they've got a big series this weekend. If you want real-time analysis of any of those things before our next podcast, Twitter is probably the best way to get it. Again, Ben Dubose is my handle. Locked On Rockets is the show's handle. Beyond that, if Twitter is not your thing, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, website LockedOnRockets.com, email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, interact, inquire about advertising. If there's anything we can do to improve this experience for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. As always, thanks for listening. And remember that in addition to just listening, you can and should subscribe to this show, which you can do on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and get our most recent episode that way as well. Once again, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.